From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. For almost 25 years, a 500,000 acres of Wisconsin's wildlife habitat, streams and rivers, and natural areas have been preserved through the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program. Now, the proposed state budget would freeze the program. Lawmakers are discussing whether or not to pass Governor Scott Walker's suggestion as they work to finalize the budget. Here today to discuss what this could mean for conservation easements in the Cooley region are Carol Abrahamson, she's the Mississippi Valley Conservancy Executive Director, and Pat Caffrey, he's with the MVC's Board President. I'm wondering if someone wants to give a brief history lesson of the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program. Pat, can you just remind people what it is? It started in 1989, 1990?
It started in 1989. It's a program to buy land for the state or buy conservation easements for the state to protect some of the special places in Wisconsin. And since that time, there's over 627,000 acres have been protected, of which over 500,000 acres is actually owned by public entities and is open to the public for all forms of recreation, a whole bunch of recreation purposes. And it's strongly supported by the public. It's been bipartisan. That's why it was named the Knowles Nelson, named after a Republican and a Democratic governor. And so I think it's been a very successful program.
And Carol, did you want to add anything?
You know, to add to Pat's numbers, the number of acres that have been conserved through the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program just in our region, the nine counties that Mississippi Valley Conservancy covers, is 5,858 acres.
Wow. And what kind of lands are we talking about when we look at the land you work with here in western Wisconsin?
A lot of this land has been the blufflands, so it could be forested land, oak savannas, prairies, some wetlands. It's a wide variety, and these properties support a wide variety of habitats, both plant and animal species. They're really important this time of year for migrating birds. And as Pat said, they're all open to the public. So people who love to watch birds or hunt, fish, take their families out for a hike, they can do that on these acres, and they don't have to have land that they own to do those activities.
So how does the funding work? The DNR works with organizations like Mississippi Valley Conservancy and cities or counties to kind of dole out the grant funding?
There are several different sub-funds within the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Fund. And the one that we use for nonprofit conservation organizations requires a minimum of a 50% match. So all those state dollars are at least doubled in acquiring property for the public, which is a large benefit. There's also a pretty strict evaluation criteria to make sure that only the best, most deserving properties receive funding. MVC has like a 3-page document we go through to prioritize those properties most deserving of protection. And once we make a recommendation and apply for a grant, state ecologists from the Department of Natural Resources will go out, review our application, and look at the property and make sure so that the funding from the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program is going to the most deserving properties.
Is it quite competitive? Have there been times when MVC has approached the DNR for funding and been turned down?
We normally talk to them early in the process and make sure we put a lot of time into something, it's something that they think is important. Mm-hmm. We also have our criteria list is based on criteria established by the state through the Wisconsin Land Legacy Report and the State Wildlife Action Plan. So we know exactly what their priorities are, and then we try to target those priorities with our projects. Our staff is very familiar with that, and so they generally will look at a project and say, yeah, this one's probably not going to make it, so we're not going to pursue that, at least not with stewardship funding.
And Carol, you said there's more than 5,000 acres that have been preserved through Mississippi Valley Conservancy and the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program. About how much money does that turn out to be or has gone into or come from the stewardship program?
Well, I can give you an example of a project that we're working on right now, actually. We currently have our Sugar Creek Bluff State Natural Area is 276 acres near Ferryville. And we are going to be able to add 144 acres to that. Due to this program, we have the purchase price is $532,000, and we've applied for $432,000 from the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Fund. So you know, when you look at that amount of money, could we have raised that ourselves? It would have been really difficult. No, we did raise an additional $50,000 through the Paul E. Stry Foundation, the Whitetails Unlimited. We have a $5,000 grant from them, and our donors, and through their generosity, we were able to raise the balance of it. But it's just a really large chunk of change when you're purchasing properties, and it varies depending on the property, the owner, the location. You know, like any kind of real estate, it's competitive. So the actual total, I don't know, Pat, if you know how much we've spent over the years.
I don't know the total over the years, no.
But these projects wouldn't be possible without this fund.
So given that the governor has proposed freezing the funds within the next state budget, where does that put that current project? How is that going to be affected? Do you know at this point?
Well, yes, we should have this project wrapped up before the end of this fiscal year.
Okay.
So it's already planned for the budget. Joint Finance Committee is meeting on it very shortly here, and we'll have it wrapped up. But going forward, you know, this is a project where the landowners, they were selling this land, regardless of whether we had funds to buy it or not. And if we didn't, it would have gone into private ownership and likely have been developed. So once these really beautiful special places are gone, if the funds aren't there for us to make that purchase in a timely manner, they're not going to come back again. Once the land is developed, it won't be undeveloped.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Today, we're talking about the budget proposal to freeze the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program. My guests are Carol Abrahamson, she's the Mississippi Valley Conservancy Executive Director, and Pat Caffrey, he's the Mississippi Valley Conservancy's Board President. Pat, I'm wondering if you want to add on to what Carol said about if this funding is frozen for I think the governor wanted to propose it or freeze it into 2026.
2028.
What could that mean for the future of land conservation within the Cooley region?
It could be real problematic. As Carol mentioned, many of these properties only come up for sale once every couple generations or something. Even in our state parks, there are private inholdings in many state parks, wildlife areas. I'm aware of one right now in the Van Loon Wildlife Area here in La Crosse County. There's some privately owned land that is just coming up for sale, and hopefully that's going to be completed under the current funding for the stewardship program. But if not, that could be sold to someone else and not become available again for hundreds of years, possibly. And then it makes management of the property much more difficult if you're going to, for example, do a prescribed burn and you've got private land in the middle of the area you're hoping to manage. That can add some real problems.
So I want to summarize Governor Walker's thoughts behind this proposal. According to another WPR story, he wants to freeze the land buys and conservation easements until the debt payments for stewardship bonding substantially shrinks in relation to the protected land. And he says this could take about 13 years. Can you help us understand what exactly is going on here?
The stewardship program is currently being funded by bonding. So the state bonds basically borrows the money, and then they pay the debt service on that. And I think there's some logic to the fact that when you're spending a significant amount of money annually, it's better if you don't bond for it. If you can do as pay as you go, then all of your money is going into protecting valuable property and not going into interest payments. So the objective of trying to reduce the bonding makes sense, but if you could taper it off and start to bond for less and pay as you go for more of it and gradually transition over a period of 10 or 15 years, I think that would be great. Freezing it for 13 years, as we just discussed, is going to mean lots of great opportunities being missed, and also I think politically threatens the life of the policy. If the stewardship is gone for 13 years, is it ever going to be revived? I don't know.
And Carol, it's been really interesting just to hear the different reactions from lawmakers. Some say, at this point in time, we can't afford this program.
That is what we've heard. You know, the pie is only so big. It really comes down to how you're going to split the pie. Mm-hmm. But again, getting back to the fact that once these opportunities are lost, they're lost forever. That habitat is gone forever. The opportunity, even for the monies that come in from the outdoor recreation industry in Wisconsin, $12 billion a year And if you can't provide more lands for people to use, then you can't expect to have any growth in that revenue as well. It's just incredible. You know, hunting and fishing is so important to the culture and the tradition of this state, and not everybody can or is able to own land. And that's one of the things that we're able to provide through this program. So it really is a benefit for everybody, not just today, but forever, because the land that we protect is protected forever.
I was interested by some of the comments that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss made regarding the program. He almost suggested, he didn't necessarily agree with the governor on the governor's proposal, but he suggested steering away from large land purchases, and I think this refers to a lot of forest land purchases up in northern Wisconsin, and to focus more on these smaller purchases to turn into maybe parks or just recreational areas. What do you think about that idea?
Well, there are a lot of parameters that come with using these funds from this program. So turning something into a park that was purchased through the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Fund, unless all of the rules were changed, wouldn't be possible. I understand when you look at the tracts of land that are purchased in the northern part of the state, it's quite different than what's purchased down in our area here in western Wisconsin or in the southern area of the state. However, those forest lands up there are very important to the economic timber industry up there, and they provide a lot of jobs. So it all has a place in the state of Wisconsin.
Pat, did you want to add?
Yeah, the timber and paper industry in Wisconsin is a $20 billion industry. And some of the stewardship purchases, the Willow Flow, which was a very large one just a few years ago, means that there's going to be productive forest land available forever in the future so that those jobs will remain viable.
So they can still harvest the
they
wood
can still harvest the wood,
stewardship
but
lands.
That land is also open for public hiking and hunting and fishing. So you're really getting the maximum use out of that property. And there's obviously an economic benefit there. So there is economic payback for these stewardship dollars that are expended.
You know, are there other projects in the works that could be potentially impacted, just different tracts of land that MVC has its eyes on? I know you talked about the area in Ferryville, but I know you guys are always planning so far ahead. Other areas that you're looking at that could be impacted if these funds are frozen?
Well, I think what's impacted is the opportunities, because we don't necessarily go out and seek lands to purchase. They come to us. And so when a family or an individual comes to us and says, we really want to sell this property right now, and we aren't able to help them out with that, they will go elsewhere. So maybe, Pat, you've got another thought on that, but it really is about the timing.
Because not every family can afford to just donate the land.
Right, either. Right.
No, and I'm aware of three specific projects I can think of, and we don't talk about specific projects. We, you know, respect the privacy of those landowners until those projects are complete. But if the stewardship program is killed, there are some very valuable properties that are, it's one adjacent to a state park, another in holding in a state wildlife area, and some others that probably will be passed on to some other private property owner.
So if you do acquire a land, just to maybe help people understand a little more, if you were to acquire land next to a state park, would that potentially become part of the state park? Would it be MVC land? How does MVC work with the DNR on purchases like that?
We often look for if there's a conservation partner better suited to manage that property than us. And it has to be, we can't just give it to anyone.
Sure.
But obviously the DNR would be a good partner, Fish and Wildlife Service, if it's adjacent to some of the refuge properties, or possibly another organization. We're currently transferring some to the Archaeology Conservancy. And we've transferred some to the Prairie Enthusiasts, where it's more in their region or in the type of property they like to manage better.
So last week, you all were in Madison talking with lawmakers about this. What were you hearing from them regarding the future of the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program? Carol?
Well, we definitely heard support. Of course, it depends on who you're talking to. But, you know, even the representative in our district, Lee Nearson, he understands how important this program is, but he also understands the limitations to the budget. So there was talk of some possibility for compromise. You know, it doesn't necessarily have to be frozen for 13 years. It's just going to depend on what they can work out when they start to talk about this topic within the budget. But I think Pat had alluded to this earlier. There's great support for this program across Wisconsin. The Nature Conservancy did, I believe it was 12 years ago, they did a survey and asked for people to give their thoughts on the support of this program. And 90% of the people in Wisconsin, Republican and Democrat, supported the program. And recently they took that survey again, and the results were exactly the same. There's still 90% support across the state from the citizens of Wisconsin.
You talked about hearing about compromise. Do you have any sense as to what a compromise on this issue could look like?
I don't. I've heard a lot of things talked about. There's been the talk of perhaps it would be funded at a lower level, perhaps the freeze would be not as long. I have no idea. I think everybody has thoughts and ideas that are being discussed.
Yes, yeah, Secretary Stepp proposed a compromise that would fund easements only and not acquisitions.
What is the difference between the two?
On a conservation easement, the private individual still owns the property,
oh, sure.
But they basically sell or give away the development rights, so we know that that land will be protected, remain forever as agricultural land or as prime wildlife habitat. Whereas with acquisition, then either an organization like MVC or the state becomes the owner of the property. With the requirement that any land acquired or easement acquired with stewardship funds is open for full public access, it makes that program pretty unattractive for most private property owners that can work well with timber or paper companies if they want to continue to own land but have an easement on it and get either a tax credit or cash from the stewardship funds for that. But it really, for getting an easement on private land, is not very helpful.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Today, we're talking about the budget proposal to freeze the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Program. My guests are Pat Caffrey. He's the board president with Mississippi Valley Conservancy, and Carol Abrahamson. She's the Mississippi Valley Conservancy's executive director. Funds for this program were threatened in the last budget cycle. And did that outcome have any sort of impact on how MVC looked at future projects? And now here we are again, the program threatened in different ways. So, you know, just as we kind of look ahead and as you look, you know, backwards and forwards at the future of all this, how does it change the way you think about land acquisition?
There's some projects that we probably just would not be able to do if there were not stewardship funds available. And you're right, the funding has changed. Prior to 2011, it was funded at $86 million a year. And then the 2011-2013 period, it was $60 million a year. This year, there's $54.5 million, and it was proposed for next year to be at, and subsequent years to be at $50 million until the governor's proposed budget came out and dropped it to zero. So it has declined significantly. The portion of the Knowles-Nelson Stewardship Fund that is for nonprofit conservation organizations like MVC was not cut as much last year as some of the other programs. But it still is, scarce funds. There's more demand for the funds than there are funds available.
Carol, do you have to start thinking differently about how to acquire land? I mean, just with the political landscape that sort of surrounds this issue?
We do always think about the what-ifs. But I think what's most important with Mississippi Valley Conservancy is we have many, many private landowners who are interested in conserving their land, a conservation easement on their property, which they would continue to own and use as they are today. And so that work could certainly keep us busy. but again, it goes back to those missed opportunities. We can certainly do fundraising for these projects, but to raise $500,000 or even $1 million, depending on the size of the project, that's pretty difficult.
Most of the conservation easements we've acquired in recent years, especially since the requirement for public access came into, are donated conservation easements where the property owners have developed real love and respect for their property and want to make sure it's protected after they're gone. And so the property is protected, but that doesn't help the general public with access to that property. It's still private land, whereas the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Fund does provide public access. In Wisconsin, approximately 17% of the total area of the state is under some type of governmental control, compared to 25% in Minnesota and 21% in Michigan. So we lag behind our neighboring states in terms of the amount of land that we have that's available for public use.
I'm wondering if there has been any project that MVC has taken on that has not been funded by Knowles Nelson Stewardship funding.
It's actually probably a majority of our projects have not been. As we talked about the private property owners who want to see their property protected, most of those conservation easements are donated to MVC, usually with an additional donation in cash to assure that those properties can be monitored and legally defended in perpetuity. So the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program is important when there's a special property that comes up for acquisition that we want to own or transfer to another public body, but it's not used as much for conservation easements, which is a majority of the land that we've protected.
I'm wondering, beyond fighting for the Knowles Nelson Stewardship Program, what else does MVC have on the horizon when it comes to just either different programs or projects you have going on right now?
Well, we also manage the lands that we own, so that's a really important priority in our strategic plan. We have a full-time land manager, and we rely on many, many volunteers to help us out. We recently received a new grant, and we're really excited about this, from the James E. Dutton Foundation, and it will fund this summer a three-person field intern crew to help us manage not just the lands that we own, but to help some of our private landowners as well with some of their habitat restoration. So we're very excited about that. The other thing that MVC is very involved in is environmental education. And we have a grant from the La Crosse Community Foundation that helps us fund our outreach and education program with our part-time coordinator, Kathy. She is the person who gets these kids out of the classroom and
into
onto
nature.
The lands.
Nice.
Yes, where they can really learn about habitats, why they're important, feel engaged and feel a part of the work that we are doing, and really instill a land ethic in them early. For some of these kids, they are afraid to even go out in their own backyard by themselves. So it's really important that we get them out when they're young and help them to learn, you know, what is this bug or this butterfly or this plant? Is it useful? Is it good? What should I know about it when I come across it myself? And just finding that comfort. And with our outreach program is also our link to the land hikes, which are for families. So every month we have a new hike. And these are sponsored by the Mayo Clinic Health System. And we just had one on Saturday where 32 people, lots of them families with young children, were out hiking and learning and preparing for Earth Day. This is our Earth Week, and we are celebrating Earth Day, and there's an Earth Fair at the end of the week. So those are just some of the other projects that we have ongoing at Mississippi Valley Conservancy.
Pat, anything you're looking forward to coming up with MVC?
Some better weather so we can complete the prescribed
burns
that we're ready to do. We've either had burn bans or rain. Yeah, the management of the land is very important. All of the 9 counties that MVC serves are in the driftless area. And this area was primarily prairie and savanna prior to European settlement. And fire is needed to maintain the habitats. Most of the rare and endangered species in our area are those that are connected with those prairie or savanna habitats. And so if we buy an area and protect it because it's got a really neat remnant prairie, if we don't manage that prairie, burn it occasionally, and control invasive species, it's not going to retain those values that it was protected for in the first place. So that is an important part of our operations.
Carol, any final thoughts?
You know, we're talking about millions of dollars here, and it may sound like a really large program, but in reality, this program costs each citizen of Wisconsin about 30 cents per week, approximately $15.5 a year. That's not very much money. And yet we provide beautiful places for people to hike, hunt, fish, or just sit quietly and reflect on their day. We know that there have been many, many studies lately where we see that a healthy environment equals a healthy community. And that's what we try to do at MVC.
Carol Abrahamson is Executive Director of the Mississippi Valley Conservancy. Pat Caffrey is president of MVC's board of directors. They've been talking about the potential impact of suspending public land purchases through the Department of Natural Resources' Knowles Nelson Stewardship Fund. The budget proposed by Governor Scott Walker would prevent new land purchases until interest is paid off on former ones, which is estimated to take 13 years. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up, learn more about drastic proposed changes to Wisconsin's family care program and the impact it could have on residents who are elderly and disabled. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has archives of other recent editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share a comment or make a suggestion for a future show, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows and photos, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. Senior citizens and residents who are disabled in Wisconsin are bracing for major changes in the state's family care program, which helps people remain independent and stay out of nursing homes. The new two-year budget proposed by Governor Scott Walker calls for creating a statewide system. Advocates of the current regional system are not sure what the governor's plan means for their future. Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis talked with Western Wisconsin Cares Executive Director Tim Garrity about the issue.
Western Wisconsin Cares is a managed care organization. We are a long-term care district, so we're a public entity, and we contract with the state of Wisconsin Department of Health Services through their Medicaid program to provide the family care benefit to eligible members in an 8-county area kind of surrounding La Crosse County. Our job is to provide care management, social worker and nurse services, along with our provider network services, to eligible members who either have disabilities or are frail elders, so that they are able to maintain the highest level of independence possible.
And it's a regional focus. It's not just La Crosse County.
Correct. We serve 8 counties in western Wisconsin. La Crosse is the largest, but we serve sort of south of Eau Claire to Clark County, and then down to Vernon County. So 8 counties total. We serve almost 4,000 members in our program.
Can you give us a brief history of the family care program in Wisconsin? It's something the state has shifted to within the last 10 or 15 years.
About 15 years, yeah. We the family care program was the result of about 4 years of planning work at the state level. Governor Thompson pulled together a group of stakeholders from provider community, from counties, advocacy organizations, clients served by the program, to really redesign the way that long-term care was delivered in the state of Wisconsin. And in 2000, the result of that four-year effort led to 5 pilot counties to work out the details of how the program would work. La Crosse County was one of those 5 pilots. From 2000 to 2007, the La Crosse County pilot operated along with the other 4 in the state. And following that successful piloting of the program, the family care was regionalized and rolled out to most of the state in 2008-2009.
So why was it proposed in the first place, or why was this an area the state felt it need to work on?
Right. So folks who need long-term care services often in Wisconsin and many other states wound up in nursing homes or institutional placements. There are 2 issues with that. First of all, most people would prefer to live in the community if they can. And secondly, it's very expensive. It's the most expensive way to take care of someone who has long-term care needs is in an institutional setting. Because of family care, nursing home days have dropped dramatically in the state of Wisconsin. From about 60-some percent of the dollars were spent on institutional care when family care started, we're at about 31% now statewide. So you're looking at a savings of about $300 million. Okay. Additionally, member satisfaction at being able to live in the community with the supports they need is high. Family care member satisfaction statewide is in the mid-90%. So
how does family care work, or what does it do for people that allows them to remain independent and in their home?
Yep, so family care starts with a members. We call the folks that we serve members. They're part of our team. So that experience, if someone needed long-term care services, would start at the Aging and Disability Resource Center. Those are operated by counties right now. someone with long-term care needs that's determined to have the appropriate level of need, so a nursing home level of need, not necessarily placement, and that's financially eligible, so eligible for Medicaid, basically, would be given the option of a long-term care program like Western Wisconsin Cares. Once they're enrolled, our care team, nurse and social worker, go out and do a comprehensive assessment, multiple areas, all of the domains that someone's would impact someone's life. And we work with the member on what are their outcomes. So what are their goals? Is it important that they work? Is it important that they are near family or not near family? All those kind of variables. And then we design a care plan that has to meet two tests, basically. It has to be effective, so it has to meet the member's outcomes or goals that they've developed. And secondly, it has to be cost effective. So once those two tests have been sort of agreed upon by the care team, then the plan for supports is implemented with the member.
What is the satisfaction like? Do you do routine surveys of the members, and are they Yes. happy with it?
Yes, we do an annual survey. We're required by our contract with the Department of Health Services to do an annual survey of all of our members. That's done through the mail, and we ask them questions like, are you happy with your supports and caregivers? Are you satisfied with your care team, nurse and social worker? Are you able to meet your goals and outcomes? And so we measure that. That's actually compiled on a statewide basis as well.
What percentage of
between 90 and 95% on an annual basis.
And that's pretty good for something like this.
Oh, it's very good. Yeah. It's a very high satisfaction rate.
So how many, I assume thousands are served in the eight counties of Western Wisconsin Cares?
Yes, we serve a little under 4,000 members in our program.
The proposal from the governor's office would do what?
So the proposal from the governor's office would do several things. First, it would create one statewide area for coverage in family care. So right now there's eight regions in the state, and this would do away with those. There would be one statewide provider. It eliminates a standby or a stand next to program called the IRIS program, which is offered for folks who would like to self-direct their care. That would go away under the governor's proposal.
Before you go on, could you define IRIS?
Yes.
And what it is and what it does and what IRIS stands for?
Yes, IRIS is I Respect, I Self-Direct is what it stands for. So IRIS is an acronym. The IRIS program allows people to choose a model where they direct their own care. So the same process I described to develop a care plan with a member in family care would be used in the IRIS program to develop a budget. So let's say it's $1,000 a month of support needs that a member would have. That member then is able to direct their own care. So they would hire their own workers, they would manage their own budget, et cetera. There's a support broker that's available to help them if they need it, but essentially it's self-directed care. There's about 11,000 members or participants who choose the IRIS program in Wisconsin. I believe it's the largest self-directed Medicaid program in the nation.
So if you could go on, I'm sorry to interrupt that I interrupted you, but if you could go on, what else does the governor's budget do to the family care program?
Yep. So it would make the program statewide. It would add hospital and doctor visits, so acute and primary care, to the family care benefit. It would eliminate the IRIS program, as I said. It would also allow the ability to privatize the functions of the aging and disability resource centers. So right now, again, those are county-run entities, and that would become privatized. So essentially what you would be looking at, and this is the Department of Health Services has talked about other states, you'd be looking at replacing the regional MCO model with a statewide for-profit managed care insurance company.
What is the concern on the part of people who manage the family care program now and the members who are part of the program? What was the concern changing the rules, so to speak?
Sure. One of the main concerns is that the family care program has been very effective in meeting all the goals that were set out for it. A big part of that is the local presence and relationships that are built and county involvement. And so this system has really been a grassroots system that has grown up around local communities. So the La Crosse surrounding area has much different needs and customs and, you know, ways of interacting than, say, the Milwaukee area. And the MCO in those different regions really reflects the sort of way of doing business and the needs of the members that we serve. When you look at the states that have gone to a state statewide model, you really lose that. It becomes much more of a medical or insurance model. You're often calling a call center type of a setup versus, someone who works at Western Wisconsin Cares, who literally is right down the street in some cases.
Do we have a state in the upper Midwest who's gone this model, and what has the outcome been there?
Right. Upper Midwest, we haven't had any yet. The states that we've looked at in terms of what this proposal might do, Florida, Kansas, California, and Tennessee have been four states that the Department of Health Services at the state level has talked about.
And do they have a recent history with this?
All of these models are recent. I think the earliest started in 2011. One thing one needs to be aware of is the family care model has operated in place of the county waiver system since around 2000. So many of the changes that these other four states are looking at have already occurred in Wisconsin. And so the four states I mentioned are moving from a county waiver or state waiver model to a managed care model. And so in Wisconsin, we already have 15 years of both building up of provider networks and systems, as well as cost effectiveness in Wisconsin. So we're way ahead of those four states that we've talked about.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio La Crosse. I'm John Davis. We are talking with Western Wisconsin CARES Executive Director Tim Geraghty about potential changes to the state's family care program proposed in Governor Scott Walker's budget and the potential impact they could have on disabled and elderly across Wisconsin who like the program the way it is. Family care is designed to keep people living independently. I'm sure every case is individualized, but is there a common case with, say, somebody who's elderly or mm-hmm. somebody who's disabled, that a situation somebody might find themselves in, and could you maybe work through how it would work with that person family?
Yep. So the most common services that we fund and provide for the average member, if you will, would be supportive home care or home care services, so help with daily chores and those kind of things as someone ages. Transportation to medical appointments and the like is another large service. And then in the case of an elderly member, assisted living is also a pretty consistent service. So you can think of it as sort of a continuum. As the member is able to remain at home, there's the supportive services in the home and transportation to appointments, et cetera. And as the person's acuity or needs increase, often folks wind up in assisted living. One of the key pieces with family care that has made it a successful model is one of the pieces the care team and the member do when the process starts and as the plan is reviewed is really look at natural or community supports. So rather than paid supports for every need, what's already in a person's life that just happens because they live in the community they do or they're part of the family that they are in. So we have a lot of members that are cared for by family members, or those family members are able to provide some of those services. So that is a big part of the family care program.
What kind of feedback has Western Wisconsin CARES received from family members or members in general?
Regarding this proposal?
Regarding the governor's budget and
yes.
what it would do.
So we attended a public hearing in Reedsburg, a joint finance committee public hearing in Reedsburg, and I believe all but one person who spoke was concerned about these changes. One of the most concerning pieces of this is that it was done with no stakeholder input. So even the Department of Health Services is on the record saying in Joint Finance that they did not know this proposal was going to be in the budget. And Wisconsin, the success of the Family Care IRIS and ADRC models, one of the key pieces of that was the stakeholder involvement on the front end to make sure we get it right and that, we think of all the unintended consequences that could come when you change a system. And one of the most concerning pieces of this is that did not happen. Mm-hmm. So this just came out of the blue, literally. And so the concern for members and family members has almost universally been anxiety and fear and concern.
Is the concern the anxiety and not knowing what comes next, or mm-hmm. is it that we're going to go back to the way it was, 15 or 20 years ago,
right.
and people are going to lose their independence?
Right. I think that would be the sort of a a fear is that, you know, as you think of the more of a medical or insurance model, that there might be a de-emphasis on some of the community-based services that are provided. So that's certainly one fear that we've heard expressed. Another fear is really just the fear of the unknown. So if the family care model needs to change in some way, again, typically there's a process that involves stakeholder input, et cetera, and changing a system that's this complex and that people rely on to the degree that they do sort of in this window of a budget process is very anxiety producing for the folks that we talk to.
Is there any model or any evidence that suggests that this is actually going to save more money for the state?
Right. So in the current biennial budget that's been proposed, the savings that's identified for the changes to the long-term care system is about $14 million. That $14 million is from already in the pipeline expansion of the current system. So the there are seven counties in the northeast of Wisconsin, Brown County and that area, that we're in the process of expanding anyway. So the dollars that $14 million is a result of expansion of the current model. There are no additional dollars identified in the budget proposal.
Okay, yeah, family care has not been statewide. It's almost statewide.
It's almost statewide.
But not quite statewide. Right. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio La Crosse. We're talking about the issue of potential changes to the family care program with our guest, Western Wisconsin Care's Executive Director, Jim Garrity. This has actually saved money, as far as we know. Why is that not being taken into consideration in this? It's already done a pretty good job saving money.
Right. You know, the Department of Health Services, as recently as 2013, put out a report actually showing the savings. So nursing, or the percentage of the overall Medicaid budget that's being spent on long-term care has gone from 53% to 43% in the last decade or so. The cost of the Medicaid program as it relates to long-term care it's called bending the curve, right? So you can project growth, and the goal of Medicaid is really to bend the curve and get those costs to start to come down. And that has happened in the family care program.
What has the impact been on nursing homes in Wisconsin of doing this?
Right. So nursing homes, the amount of days or bed days in nursing homes have gone down dramatically since the inception of family care. What that's led to for many nursing homes in this area is they've expanded their service continuum. And so organizations that, 15, 20 years ago would have been primarily a nursing home they still have a nursing home option, but many of them have expanded to a continuum of assisted living and community-based services and day services and those kind of things.
So they've adjusted to that.
Yep, and that was one of the key pieces is in developing this community-based care model is would providers be able to fill in the gap as we moved away from an institutional model?
And they have been. And you've had enough home health care providers who've been able to, I assume it's been kind of a new market for them, hasn't it?
It's grown over time. It wasn't something that happened overnight. But, yes, to this point, we have certainly had enough care providers.
Right. Describe a little more in detail how Western Wisconsin Cares works regionally.
Sure.
To ensure that all the right services are, I think you go all the way up to Buffalo County, right. Don't you? And there's a lot of rural counties.
Yes, outside of La Crosse, it's all rural areas, really. We have four offices, satellite offices in communities. We have one in Mondovi, we have one in Blair, we have one in Sparta, and then we have one in Neillsville. And in our planning process back in the mid-2000s, we set up our offices. I often get the question, why did you pick those communities of all the places one could go? And our goal was really to be able to touch every member in 30 minutes. And so our care teams are in those communities and are connecting with members and family members as needed. So we have a presence in the communities that we serve.
And then talk a little bit about how the coordination works with the ADRCs.
Right.
And making sure that people can get the care they need to stay in their homes.
Right. So we coordinate very closely with the ADRCs, and they really manage enrollment and disenrollment for the long-term care system. So they're a really neutral third party who's able to say, yes, this person is eligible, and it makes sense for them to enter the long-term care system, and no, they're not eligible. On the disenrollment end, if someone's leaving the program, they're also the party that provides options counseling to that person. So if you're choosing to leave the IRIS program or Western Wisconsin Cares to go to another model, here's what those other options look like. Here's what will happen at that point. And, you know, family care, long-term care in Wisconsin is really a three-legged stool at this point. So you have the ADRCs who really provide the neutral third-party information to people in the system. And then you have the IRIS program, which is, again, that self-directed option for people who want to direct their own care. And then you have the more formalized family care model.
Are there a waiting list for this family care program? We often hear of, you know, the struggles with state-funded health care mm-hmm. programs and the waiting lists that are created, but has that happened with family care?
One of the main goals of the long-term care reform in the late 90s, early 2000s was to eliminate waiting lists. So there were approximately 12,000 people in the state of Wisconsin on the wait list when family care began. In any county that family care is at full entitlement, it is an entitlement program. So there is no wait list in the eight counties that we serve. If someone has needs and they're in the ADRC right now, they can be enrolled in the, you know, by the end of the week.
So I know there are a lot of people lobbying the legislature, mm-hmm. not just for this issue, but to look at other issues with the budget. What kind of approach have family care advocates taken to getting their message out to lawmakers that they don't want to change in this?
Right. A lot of it has just been education. So what is the life of someone who has long-term care needs? And how that's impacted by the quality and timeliness of the care that they receive. That's been one piece of the education. Another piece is the advantages of the regional sort of homegrown model that we have in Wisconsin and how important that local flavor is to making sure folks have their needs met. Additionally, there's a lot of newer legislators who weren't on the scene when the original planning happened for the long-term care redesign. So things like acute and primary care being rolled into the benefit, that was thought about and thought through and consciously decided that shouldn't happen because of the goals of the system at that time. And so it's really been a large education effort. We've done education on some of what has happened in other states in terms of this sort of a model and how new that is. And so you're kind of able to contrast what's happening in some of these other states with the concrete success that we've had in Wisconsin's long-term care system.
Do lawmakers need to change the budget much to preserve this family care program the way it has been traditionally?
There's no fiscal impact to this budget proposal. So it's really, the way we view it is it's really a policy change. And so our position is that policy, if the government feels we need to change the long-term care system, that is a policy decision, and it should really go through the normal policy process with stakeholder input and some research and some piloting and making sure we think through some potential unintended consequences. So there's no money really involved here.
I know that the Joint Finance Committee has started pulling mm-hmm. some of those policy issues out, but they've left this one in.
Right.
Is that good news or bad news? Or aren't people reading tea leaves at this point?
I would say it's neutral news when the Legislative Fiscal Bureau analyzes what's policy in the budget. They would see the $14 million that's in this policy item as a financial impact. So if they apply their criteria, it does make sense that this proposal would stay in the budget, even though those dollars are generated from continuing the current system.
Yeah.
So most of the policy items that were pulled out are pretty clearly non-fiscal items. And again, the money would happen in the current system, but it is dollars that's in the budget.
I know there was a home health care provider, I don't believe it was in the La Crosse area, that
Gemini
that announced it was going to close. Mm-hmm. If this program changes, could it impact those private businesses that are providing these services now to people?
Yes, it likely would change that calculation. The Medicaid program a couple years ago contracted out just one of the benefits that we provide in Medicaid, a transportation benefit, to a national for-profit company. And when that process started, there were several hundred providers of that transportation service. And right now in Wisconsin, there's 80 of those providers. So more than half are no longer providing the service. That has been a very difficult rollout for the folks that receive that service. Again, call centers, long wait times on the phone, difficulty coordinating the rides. To some degree, that's the worry that I think our advocates and participants have, is that that's only one of 30-some services that are provided in family care, and the statewide rollout of that service has been very, very difficult for members.
Tim Garrity is Executive Director of Western Wisconsin Cares, an agency that helps people live independently in 8 counties near La Crosse. He talked with Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis about proposals to change Wisconsin's family care program. Advocates for the current system say there are no reasons to change an already effective program. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers.